Welcome to the GeoMob Podcast, where we discuss geo-innovation in any and all forms, whether for fun or profit.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the GeoMob Podcast. Today, we're talking about a new data provision and processing platform that has been funded by the UK government. It's a project that has involved lots of different people and organisations. But here with me today to talk about it is Philip Kershaw, head of the Centre for Environmental Data Analysis, or CEDA. Hi there, Phil.
Hi. Nice to talk to you.
Yes, and to you. So what we usually do here is just start by people introducing themselves. So maybe you could give our listeners a little bit of background to your career and sort of how you're involved in Earth observation and geospatial more generally.
Yeah, okay. So thanks for introducing CEDA there. So CEDA is part of RAL Space. It's a department within STFC, Science and Technology Facilities Council, which itself is part of UKRI. So it's a little bit complicated, but we're arm's length from government organisation. So yeah, and we do a huge range of different things across UKRI, many different domain areas. But my particular area is around Earth observation especially, but also other areas like atmospheric science, climate science, but not actually doing the science myself, but supporting the research supporting the research community in being able to do that. So we run data centers on behalf of the Natural Environment Research Council. When I say data centers, it's kind of like virtual. So they're around different domain areas like Earth observation, atmospheric science, but we actually have a physical facility here at the Harwell campus in Oxford. So we have the Jasmine facility, which we run with the scientific computing department here on site, and we're very proud of that. It's a data-intensive supercomputer, and it underpins all of the work that we do. It provides the physical infrastructure, hosting the data, but also providing processing capability alongside that data too.
Oh, cool. Just before we sort of get on to the meat of what we're going to be talking about, so when it comes to Jasmine, is that continually being developed? Is that an ongoing sort of service that you guys are in charge of and you're constantly trying to update the software on it and grow the hardware and stuff? Or is it a fully mature service where you've sort of got to a point and now you're just running it operationally and sort of spinning the plates, as it were?
I think it's a kind of a mixture of those things. It's been an evolution since it started in 2012. That was kind of the big bang when we first created the facility and built it from scratch. And it was really in response to the challenge that I think we've all experienced across many domain areas, but particularly in Earth observation, around the huge volumes of data that we're dealing with here. Yeah. And at the time, there was a recognition that the models that we had of providing data for access and download, it wasn't scaling, it wasn't working. We wanted to build something different and provide a facility for our NERC user community and international partners to come with their processing needs, where the data is all hosted in one place. So data proximate compute was really the thing that we were trying to achieve there. We didn't know what would happen at the beginning. we built this facility. We had a very strong set of requirements. We had a good, strong evidence that this kind of model would work, but we weren't sure. And it's been tremendously successful over the last over 10 years now, isn't it? I think there was a lot of evolution at the beginning, a lot of new things that we were bringing in, and that continues. So I think there has to be those sort of things in tension in a way, that innovation to make sure we're building those new things to serve the user community in the best possible way, but also underpinned with really thinking about the operational needs, thinking about stability, thinking about how we have that continuity of service for the user community.
Yeah, excellent. Talking of sort of servicing the user and what have you, maybe you could introduce the Earth Observation Data Hub to the listeners.
Yeah, so I think there's some history there with what I was just talking about with Jasmine. Around about that same time, there was actually a dedicated initiative for the Earth Observation community called SEMS. It stands for Climate Environmental Monitoring from Space.
Okay.
And it had that similar kind of goal as Jasmine. So you could think about them as being very closely related to one another. But I think the key difference with SEMS was that it very much had a partnership with academia and industry in mind with the way that it was created. And so we had this vision to have a co-located facility with access to Earth observation data, and it was very successful for a long time. But I think a lot of the work that we did with SEMS, with Jasmine, I think really thinking about how Jasmine's really succeeded, always in the back of my mind certainly, was this sense in which there was something more that was needed, as well as having a facility here at in Harwell campus. This use of public cloud, which we know is kind of synonymous now with Earth observation data. It's used extensively, isn't it? But there was a sense in which we wanted to take advantage of also that capability alongside the facilities that we'd created here as well. And so that was part of the driver. So if we fast forward to the Earth Observation Data Hub, I could spend too long talking about that. But if we fast forward, in the last couple of years, there's been a real recognition that there is amazing range of different platforms and different data sources and capabilities, but it can be actually quite bewildering for the user community.
It can be a little bit fragmented.
You know, where do you start? There are all these amazing services and different facilities. And so a couple of years ago, in summer of 2022, the government launched an initiative, Earth Observation Investment Package, which is a big program across all different Earth observation areas, and it was influenced by the UK space strategy. And there was a real desire to look at how we could support UK with getting the best out of EO data in EO applications and a whole range of different things. And so we put in a case with some public sector partners to build this kind of hub concept. So one of the questions you ask straight away maybe is, there are lots of platforms out there already, why build another one? And I think really what we were trying to do is look at how can government play a role here? How can we provide facilitation or support to building some capability that can address some of these problems of fragmentation? And so the core concept around the hub was really thinking about how we could have a government platform that can bring these different data sources together and support industry, academia, public sector, build this capability to bring the different pieces of data together, and also to build a set of tools, like a toolkit, to help people to be able to access, analyze, get the goodness out of that data, innovate, build new applications. So I think, as well as a recognition of the fragmentation of different data sources, also recognition that there's actually quite a lot of technical barriers around use of data, around quality, around just getting the data into the right form that's actually useful to an end user or for an application.
Okay, cool. So it seems like the gap that it's trying to fill is really maybe bringing that government side of things, particularly in the UK, but that government side of things into both providing a platform that's usable for lots of other different users. But am I correct in thinking that maybe primarily trying to target government users as a start?
I think we'd always had in mind to cater for public sector and industry and research community. We've done a number of engagements, and so the approach we took with it, and I think this was something else that I really wanted to bring up here, that there are many examples of where you build a specific application to exploit EO data. But if you're trying to build something more generic to help people build applications, that's a bigger ask. And that's the kind of challenge that we had all those years ago with Jasmine. And so it's quite a challenge. And so what we did right at the beginning was to build this concept, this idea further, and do some initial engagement with different user communities. So yes, public sector, but also industry as well. And we had a pilot program. We said, look, this is the concept that we have. This is what we'd like to build. We want to prove that against your different application scenarios. What are the kind of things that you need? We'd like to really understand better what your needs are as users. And for those users as well, I think there's a subtlety to that as well, in the sense that we didn't want to second guess what those end users were. We were really thinking about those people who are building applications in the first place. So perhaps software developers, EO technical specialists, companies, that kind of thing. But also technical specialists, perhaps in the public sector or in other groups as well, academia. So we did that program, and we got a lot of really useful feedback from that. And then we used that to build the plan, really, for this first phase, this Pathfinder phase, which we've had, and build the actual platform itself. And then, having done that, do another engagement as well and say, okay, we've built this platform now. We want to engage with you again with an early tester program. Test out these ideas. Is it what you've wanted? Is it meeting those needs that we talked about in the first instance when we first started the program? But actually, we've done engagement all the way through the program and talked to users to try and get feedback as we've built the system.
Yeah, that's always a good way to try and approach these things, is to make sure that the users are engaged right from the start, so that they know. They sort of both have a little bit of a say in terms of how the actual platform gets created and how it evolves over time, but also they're aware of what the changes are that are happening. So that's really good. So these types of platforms are usually only as good as the data that you can actually get hold of. So I've got a couple of questions really around data, but maybe I can sort of conflate them down into one. So how important was it that there was a lot of interoperability on the platform in terms of accessing data from different other data services? And if I was a user, am I able to bring my own data to the platform as well?
Yeah, I think I'll just pick one area about interoperability, which is kind of very close to our hearts, which is around the use of climate data and earth observation data. And in our experience, there can be quite a bit of siloing between those groups, different technologies being used and that kind of thing. So one of the really nice outcomes from the project was we were able at the end to have a really nice catalog to bring these different data sources together. But not only that, to be able to visualize different data within the same environment. So we've got a very nice image visualization web application that's part of the resource catalog. And you can visualize both climate model data outputs and earth observation data products in the same visualization environment.
That's great.
Which, if you know about some of the technical complexities under the hood, that's quite a big thing to be able to do that. So we're very pleased with that. So yes, users can bring in their own data. So as well as federating and bringing in different data sources, you're also able to manage your own user workspace. And so you can order commercial data into that user workspace. We can bring other third-party data and bring it together into the same environment.
Okay. And I realize that it's only been a Pathfinder project, so we're still at very early stages, but have you had any thoughts about how you'd like the data library and maybe the user base as well to evolve over time? And is there a point sometime in the future where you think, oh, if I've got these data sets in there and I've got, a third of users from each of academia, commercial, and government user bases, then my job is done, sort of thing.
Yes. My experience with these kind of things is the job is never done. But clearly, yeah, there are key milestones that you can sort of plan ahead, or that you can look. Sometimes I think it's with the benefit of hindsight. You know, if I think of the history with Jasmine, there were certain points where we achieved a certain, we'd got over a particular, got to a particular summit on the way to wherever right. the final destination is. And I think there've been a number of those with the Pathfinder program. And then, you know, I think for the future, a number of people have said to me independently, it's that ability to bring different sources of data together, not just EO data, that's where you get the real value, where you're able to get that contextual information. So the, you know, the geospatial element of the data, of course, is the binding kind of key with all these different sources. So that's very powerful. We know we've seen that in many different applications, haven't we, over the last 20 years or so. And, you know, I think that's something where I think that could be really powerful and really helpful to be able to bring different kinds of data. And I think that's an area, again, where government, public sector can really play a key role and be an enabler. You know, we've had conversations with Ordnance Survey and with other groups. So, yeah, I'm excited about those possibilities.
Ah, excellent. And then moving on from the data, if I was a user and I've created my account on the system, I've done my data search, I've got a list of data that I want, I'm guessing that I can then also do some processing on the platform. Is that correct?
Yeah, you can. But I think it's also important, again, to underline that we're trying to cater for different kinds of user here. Okay. So in some cases, we're actually catering for a group that actually want to build an application on top of the Hub platform. In that case, it's a different starting point. It's kind of like they have an idea, perhaps, for an application they want to build. And to what extent do we have a toolkit, a set of bricks that they can preassemble components that they can use that's going to accelerate that process? So I think in that case, it would be a conversation with the application developers to talk about the different capabilities we have, the different APIs, the different ways of accessing data, of visualizing it, of searching it, discovering it. So it's that kind of conversation. So it's a very much different level of interaction. But I think for the other kinds of user, perhaps there is people who just want to casually browse the data. They're not especially developers. Maybe they've got some EO knowledge. You know, they can browse through our resource catalog or image visualization tool. They can access the data. If they're a little bit more technically enabled, then they can use Jupyter Notebooks. But I think probably what you're alluding to, because you're familiar with the system, is we've got a workflow engine as well. So you're able to do more heavy duty processing if you need to. So perhaps you have a large volume of EO data that you want to process into another form or add value to it in some way, or combine different products together. That's something that you can arrange with the workflow engine.
Okay, cool. I think one of the things that I really like about it, being someone who's much happier in a GeoTIFF than in a NetCDF file, is the ability to just find and poke around some of the climate data, which I've known about for years, but I've never really made the effort to go and look at. But because it's right there in the catalog, you can go and see it, and you can make an assessment as to whether or not that's going to be useful for the type of application that you might want to build. So in terms of a sort of a wider ecosystem of users for the Hub, it sounds like one of the things that you'd be quite keen to try and find are people who want to create external applications, so web apps, I'm guessing, that then hook into the EODH in some way using the data that you've just talked about. And am I right in that that's the sort of one of the use cases that you see? And it, I mean, that sounds like very different from some of the other platforms. So that in itself is a differentiator.
Yes, it is. And we spent some time really thinking about how we wanted to design the project and how we wanted to Well, I suppose I'll rewind back and say that what we didn't want to do is build a hub platform and then just wait around and users will come. But right from the get-go, we wanted to take the feedback from our initial pilot and actually fund building some test applications on top of what the platform was. And that was quite a challenging process, because as well as building the hub platform, so it's like rather like inviting some people to the building site and saying, the building will be here, we've got some things ready, but we'd like to invite you to move in, you know, try it out. But that does sound a bit strange from a civil engineering project point of view, but we know with software that this whole agile methodology is really important to keep things focused, be really oriented around user needs. And so that's what we did. We funded three different applications to be built on top of the platform. And actually with the third one, we took a little bit of a different approach. When we were talking to some of our partners, actually we worked with the OGC quite closely as well. And one of the things that came out was, yes, you can build applications, but actually what you really need as well are integrations. So the kind of the glue, the pieces to help people to be able to integrate with other kinds of applications. So we've got a Python toolkit, which people can use. So developers, technical specialists can use that for doing integrations. And a lot of work was done as well with integrating with the QGIS open source GIS application as well, so that you can use the desktop GIS app, but then behind the scenes, you're pulling data, you're visualizing data that's coming from the hub.
Okay, cool. I guess as well that those things are only really possible because you're using open standards and open APIs in the background so that people can then develop on them. So, yeah, so if there was, a commercial piece of software or something that wanted to do something similar, they can, because it's open, they can just pull that in as well. So it doesn't have to be limited to just...
That's what we hope for. And I think again it's a recognition that, you know, there is a lot of different tools out there. People aren't necessarily going to move away and just say, oh yeah, I'm going to drop everything that I've been using before and just use the data hub. The reality is people are comfortable with other kinds of packages, be they commercial or open source, and so in as much as we can provide a ramp for them to be able to use the capabilities of the hub while still using the tools they're familiar with, then that's a good thing.
In terms of commercial data providers, because there's a lot of new data providers from new space, I'm just thinking on the Earth observation side of things, but I'm guessing there's also a lot of climate data sets that are coming out and being created, particularly with the whole AI thing that's happening. I'm sure people are generating all sorts of data sets all over the place. Is it relatively simple for a commercial data provider to approach you and say, hey, we want to have a way into the EODH for our data? Can they just hook into the APIs, or do you have to hook into their APIs? How does that work? I guess it'd be a big discussion between you and whoever it is, but is that process of getting new data providers into the system sort of something that you're keen to do as well?
Yeah, it's a shame this is not a visual thing, because I've got an image in my head of what the architecture looks like, so I'll try and describe it. So here's a bit of a laugh. It's a sandwich, okay? Think of a sandwich. Okay. So bear with me. Right, so you've got a middle layer you're filling, okay, which is the hub platform. What we're trying to do is provide a glue and an enabling environment between, on the top layer, applications and users, and on the bottom layer, data. Okay. We talked just a few minutes ago about how we're trying to enable things for application users, developers, technical specialists, about that toolkit, about being able to integrate with other applications. That's our glue on the top layer. On the bottom layer, what we tried to do is, as well as funding applications, well, we built the hub platform, we funded data suppliers as well. So we put a call out to industry, and Airbus and Planet responded. So what we did is we spent time developing integrations so that their data could be integrated with the hub platform. Well, perhaps the major piece of work actually was really around the resource catalog, so the ability to search for their data holdings. in an integrated way where you can do it just from one place, from the hub platform. So yes, in working with them and also working with ourselves, actually, because we're a data provider, you know, we're a public data provider. So we have climate model data, we have Earth observation data, Sentinel data, all sorts of different kinds of data sources. But we picked on some particular ones that were relevant to the data hub from CEDAR. And so across those three, we worked on what was the standard interface, what's the contract in effect between the hub platform and those data sources. So that included discovery of data, included data access, but importantly for commercial data providers, trying to standardize the interface for actually ordering data and taking that data from the source provider and then staging it into the platform, into a user's workspace.
Okay, cool. And in your sort of user interactions, both maybe before the platform was built and sort of since the platform has come into fruition and you've been able to demonstrate sort of tangible things, are there any use cases that stand out to you, or any are there any sort of user groups that you're trying to target specifically, or are you open to anyone with an idea about how to use climate data and or Earth observation data coming to the hub, coming to you and trying to work out how EODH can help them?
We actually funded, you know, of these three applications, one of them was around climate data. Mm-hmm. And so we looked at UKCP data from the Met Office, also CMIP climate projections, and being able to visualize them and look at risks for assets on the ground of different climate scenarios in the future.
Okay.
So that was one particular area. But I think moving forward now from this Pathfinder phase, we had many organizations engaging with us as part of the early tester program. So I think we'd really want to be developing those further. I think there were around, I'm just looking at my numbers here. I think we had about 43 people, different people from different organizations, 55 organizations represented. Okay. So that's a pretty good spread.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah. I'm not sure I could pick any ones out in particular. I think there are some certainly that are really engaged with us, really interested, and some really quite exciting examples where they want to not only use the data that we've got available, but actually combine it with other data sources as well, which was something we touched on earlier.
Yeah, I guess that whole sort of fusion of data is going to be a big thing. The other big thing, and often the elephant in the room, is the use of AI these days. I know quite a lot about how AI in its more general sort of form is being implemented in sort of traditional geospatial and also Earth observation. I'm not so up to speed on how it's being implemented in the climate sciences. But do you think there's room as well for people who are interested to come and start building sort of applications and things that use some component of AI, but using the APIs and everything else that are on the hub? Is that, I'm just trying to think, is the hub trying to sort of stay ahead of some of the trends in the industry, I guess, and sort of push things through? Is that sort of the plan?
Yeah, certainly some of the groups that we've spoken with, I'm aware of at least one public sector organization that's been doing a lot of work with AI to help them, you know, get to answers to things much more quickly. I think it's really sort of speaks to one of the major challenges I hear about, is that there is this difficulty, this hurdle of not so much applying different AI techniques, but getting the data into the right format in the first place.
Yes.
So you can actually use any of these AI tools. And so I think there's something there that's important with the hub platform, what we're trying to do, that whole idea of building these different almost like Lego bricks to help people do that transformation, that data into the right format. So yeah, I would say definitely the work that we've been doing around standards, around some of the tools that we've been providing, is trying to make that fertile ground that facilitates the easier exploitation of data and see some of those AI applications come through. But I think it's also important that it's something that comes from the user.
Right.
I would say it's not something that we should be trying to, how can I put it, sort of say what that should be. I think it's a very, what we've certainly seen is when we've talked to different users and different groups, they're applying AI to do very specific things that they want to do that target a particular application need that they have. What we should be in the position of doing is making sure that we've got that underpinning layer so that they can get the data into the right format in the first place. I would say that's probably the first thing to be really looking at and tackling. So I hope we can do that. And we're hoping to do some more pilots and do more further engagement with users and refine what we've built. So I would hope that that would come through that.
Okay, cool. And so is that the next step, really? Is a few more pilots, some targeted engagement? Is that before release to the general the general populace who might want to use it? Or can anyone approach you at the moment and say, hey, I want an account to see what this is about?
Yeah. So I think, if I rewind back, you know, we developed a concept through information feedback we had with partners who were coming back with the same kind of problems. They're saying, look, this is the problem that needs to be addressed. We developed a pilot program. We got more information, enough to be able to build that first environment, which we've done through this Pathfinder phase. And then we did some further testing to say, okay, this is what we've built. Does it validate? Does it check in with the kind of things you were looking for? And so I think that's where we're up to now, is taking it that next step to do more refinements, to do much more intensive, I would say, looking over the shoulder and looking at what the user actually needs, what's the way they interact with the system, how can we make this so that it's really very user-centric. And then from there, yes, take it forward and have bring more users on board. But we want to do that as a gradual step-by-step process.
Right, excellent. Well, Phil, unfortunately we're out of time, but that's been really fascinating to find out about how the hub is being created and the technologies behind it, but also the fact that you're really, really interested in making it sort of user-centric and a hub for users rather than just a hub. So thank you so much for coming onto the podcast. If people want to get in touch with you or learn more about the project, is there anywhere that they need to be headed in terms of sort of ways of contacting you?
They can look up the CEDA website, and then there's the Data Hub itself as well.
Okay.
EODataHub.org.uk.
Yes, and we'll have that link in the show notes as well. So, brilliant. Phil, thank you so much. It's been wonderful talking to you.
Yeah, it's great to talk to you. Thanks a lot.
Cheers.
Thanks for joining us today on the GeoMob podcast. We hope you enjoyed the discussion. You can get the show notes over on the website, which is at thegeomob.com. And while you're there, you can sign up for our monthly newsletter and find links to our accounts on Mastodon and LinkedIn so that you can stay up to date on all our upcoming events. We hope to see you at an event soon.